terrible swimming experience.
Well, you don't have to tell us about your swimming experience. Just tell us about your father.
My father. When I was age 10, my father decided, maybe even younger than that, decided it was time for me to learn to swim. And being a great swimmer from Russia, he was a fantastic swimmer. I never saw anybody swim like he used to swim sitting on the water. He used to cut his toenail swimming on the water. Never saw anybody. Anyhow, he took me into the Irene Kaufman Settlement pool, takes me over to the deep water, and I walked in like a little lamb, and he threw me into the deep water. And I remember how I went down to this day. I went down like this. and they dragged me out of the bottom of the pool and pumped the water in me. I almost drowned. I came home, my mother called him out silly. And he said, if he's such a dummy, he's trying to breathe underwater. Anyhow, but the point was, since that day, I have a real psychosis. And swimming instructors, I make appointments with them to teach me, and I cancel them. I always break them. I go into the water. I can swim across a pool if I know that when I stand up, I'm going to
touch
terra firma. Let me touch them. So, but that's it. But since that
You mentioned the swimming pool. This was the Irene Kaufman Settlement
in the hill. Had a swimming pool.
It was at the hill.
That's correct.
Was that like the Jewish Community Center in those days too?
That was it. Everything emanated from that. The Irene Kaufman Settlement was called, named after Irene Kaufman, the Edgar Kaufman's daughter, from Kaufman's department store. And he built that.
What all did they offer there?
Everything. But I rarely went to things. I never participated. I was too busy with my music at home. Music became, I suppose, most important thing in my life.
As an occupation, you knew this is what you wanted to do?
Well, I imagine that was in the back of my mind, but I was very much interested. I practiced. While the kids most, I played ball with them too, but most of the time I was in practice.
What was your first honest-to-God job?
It was a bar mitzvah job.
Playing violin,
yeah, And then my father gave me some money at that time. I was only about 12 years old then, and he gave me some money. I started a jazz band. I can even remember what I called it. It was called Stan Stanley and His Orchestra. it was Cab Calloway, so I made it Stan Stanley. And we played for the Jewish organizations, the shuls, if they had a picnic or something. I remember once we were rained out and they refused to pay me. And I had to pay the musician, and my father went through the ceiling that night. But that was it. But the usual thing.
You called it Stan Stanley.
You're getting that down. Stan Stanley and His Orchestra.
Well, that's, those are things that are very interesting, too.
Yeah. Well, the life of a musician, of course.
Now, what about your... you said that you almost decided to be a rabbi. At what point?
No. The rabbi decided that for me.
Not
me. Because I learned very easily, I wanted... I guess I was a very permissive kid. And I was interested. It was fascinating me. The words... I've always been interested in words and language. The words fascinated me. And so I learned the Hebrew words, and so that was about it.
So when you went to high school, you went to
Fifth Avenue
High School, and then you got a scholarship to Duquesne
University.
Well, what happened between Fifth Avenue and Duquesne University?
I went right in.
Oh, that's.
I was 17.
You were 17.
At age 17, I got a scholarship at Duquesne, flute scholarship. Four-year scholarship.
Did you audition for that?
Oh, yes. Very, very tough competition.
And then from Duquesne, you went on to Juilliard? Is that what you said? No?
From Duquesne, there were periods of my life. And from Duquesne University, I was playing in a jazz band and became terribly disenchanted with the whole jazz world. And became interested in serious music. And so I quit. And in order to really didn't study music. I got a job teaching school, and I taught in a little town called Brockway, Pennsylvania. You know
no,
what Du Bois is?
Yes, I saw that on your thing.
That's correct.
And I went to Carlisle.
I taught school there for 3 years.
Regular school.
Regular
school. Now, did you have to have a degree to teach school in
Minnesota? Yes, I had a degree.
Where did you get your
degree
from?
If you look in my profile in the back, I'm certified to teach English, German, and
where did you get
music.
The certification from?
At Duquesne University.
So you...
You taught school at
Brockway, Pennsylvania. And I was there for 3 years.
Regular classes.
Regular classes. And I taught music. And the orchestra won the state contest that year. We competed. We placed second in a national contest and with an orchestra. And that's what I guess turned me really on. And I began to study conducting very seriously. And I organized the band.
Well, did you study conducting with?
Pardon me?
I
studied with Kusevitsky. I got a scholarship to go and study with Kusevitsky at Tanglewood.
I didn't know Tanglewood was in existence as a teaching
area. That's right.
Area then.
And Leonard Bernstein was my teacher, by the way.
My goodness.
At Tanglewood. So I knew him very well, by the way, then. But he was not the
Bernstein
of the day then. He was much more of a student himself.
Now, how did you, at what point in your career did you become interested in the Board of Education and in Rhoda Sholem?
Okay,
where do we go from Brockway?
Okay, from Brockway, as I say, the salary was atrocious.
What year was this problem?
In 1938. And 39-40, year September 39-40, I took an examination in Pittsburgh, and I was called to Pittsburgh as a teacher. And I came to Pittsburgh to teach school in the public schools.
Did they have many Jewish teachers? Was that unusual?
There were many Jewish teachers in the elementary schools, or there were some, I should say, and very few in the high school, in the secondary level. I was the only Jewish teacher at Fifth Avenue High School at that time.
Because people didn't aspire to be teachers, or was there,
well,
or
I
was
don't
there
know.
Anti-Semitism
I mean,
that you were aware
there
of?
There are many stories about prejudices and a few other things that went on in that time. But you see, it so happened that my teacher in high school, who was Oscar Demler, my teacher actually sponsored me and encouraged me to come to Pittsburgh. So through him, I took the examination, came to Pittsburgh, and they offered me twice as much money as I was making in Brockway.
How much
so
was
I came,
that?
Well, I made $1,200 a year in Brockway.
1939.
They offered me $2,400. So I came to Pittsburgh for that reason. I really didn't want to live. I loved that little town I was in. In fact, I'm still friendly. Three years ago, they had a reunion, and they invited me back as an honorary thing. In fact, I set up a music scholarship in Brockway. I give them money every year, and for the most promising music student in Brockway, I sponsor one kid. I still do. I've done that for a long time.
Then how long did you teach?
Oh, I taught for a long time. I taught for...
Was this music you were teaching?
Then, yes, straight music then. In Pittsburgh, straight music. And I taught both vocal and instrumental music. And,
was this in grade schools, in high
schools? No, all high schools.
All high schools.
All high schools. In Brockway, I was the supervisor of all music, elementary and secondary. And that was it. But in Pittsburgh, I taught just great music. And then, of course, after I taught several schools. I started at Gladstone Junior High School, then I went to Fifth Avenue High School, then I taught at Peabody High School. And then the director of music retired in Pittsburgh, and they appointed me the director of music. So I became the director of music of all the schools in Pittsburgh.
That's very unusual, I would
yes,
think.
Yes, it was. I was the only Jew at the border.
I would think
the
so.
The only Jew there.
Did you find yourself comfortable?
One of the situations, as Jewish people, I can tell you an interesting story. There were 13 directors of various departments at the board, English, history, music, and so on. And once a month, there was a meeting called the SS staff. They hated, SS was changed later because of Hitler,
because
the implication.
SS.
But it was called the Superintendent Service Staff. That's how it got its name, SSS. And once a month, the superintendent had a meeting of only the directors. There were 13 of us. We met, and they brought somebody of a great authority. It could be an architect, a science man, a psychiatrist, who gave us a talk. And at that meeting, they always started the meeting off with a prayer. And it was always a Christian prayer. It was always a... And so the Jesus Christ, who gave his blood for us, died on the cross for us. So I went to one meeting, and I didn't go to the second meeting. No one said anything. And I didn't go to the third meeting, and I was called by one of the men that I knew. He said, Stan, he said, you know, you shouldn't, you were missed the first meeting. They excuse you, that you missed twice in a row. Beginning, people are talking about, why are you kind of, I said, I get sick at the meeting, at the dinner. He says, why? I said, I can't stand blood. There's too much blood on me. He said, what do you mean blood? So I told him, I said, that prayer. And Christ, he said, oh my God, I never realized it. And he says, there was a guy, self-appointed minister. He says, that's terrible. We never had a Jew there before. He says, we've got to stop. Would you mind being the minister? I said, no, I'll be the minister. But don't call me minister. I'm not a minister. He says, will you give the prayer? I said, be glad to. So I gave it in Hebrew and translated. I gave the bracha over bread. That's all. And so therefore, so for years, I gave the bracha over bread. And they thought I was crazy. So that's an interesting little sidelight,
yes,
Jewish, from a Jewish point of view.
Right.
That they did it innocently. There was no, I'm sure, there was no offense.
Yeah.
But when I said, I get sick from the blood all over my food. I can't stand it. But anyhow.
But you never ran up against any anti-Semitism.
Not overtly. I never saw it in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do know that for years, I was on many committees, top-level committees. I represented the board in many instances, traveled all. I was there for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was a director for 20 years before I quit. I took an early retirement, and that was it, for other reasons. I took retirement because I went to conduct an orchestra.
All right,
so
well, that's what now what I'm interested in.
Well, before that, so I organized and started the Pittsburgh Youth Symphony Orchestra in Pittsburgh. It's still going on, although they deny that I started, but that's beside the point. Anyhow, I can show you pictures of that if you want proof of that. But it's all recorded in the Pittsburgh Library, the music division of the library in Carnegie, and the Carnegie Library in Oakland, if anybody's interested. But that's neither here. But, and so I became very active. Then, musically speaking, that's what happened. But in the meantime, in the process, they asked me to teach some Jewish music. I became interested in Jewish music. Jewish music at Rode of Sholem Temple. And I was there for a few years, and I became, they needed a principal of the school. In the meantime, I had gone back to school and got a principal certificate. So I said, if I can't make it, I was teaching school then in music, I'll see if I can become principal in the school.
Where did you get your principal certificate? What school was this?
At Duquesne. At Pitt. I went to Pitt and got a master's in Pitt in administration.
Now, who was the rabbi at Rode of Sholem at the time that you went there?
Well, when I first started there, he's gone now, was the Rabbi Rothschild with Dr. Freehoff, see? And then I lived through 12 assistant rabbis there, going way back then. But I still am very much active with Dr. Jacob, Rabbi Jacob. So if you want to ask him a few questions, he can tell you about me. He knows me very intimately. And I still, to this day, we have lunch once a week. I have, still have lunch with Rabbi Jacob once a week. And we share some things in common. Anyhow, and so I became the principal there and became very much active. And then things happened that the Y became, there was a musician in Pittsburgh by the name of Harvey Gall. Harvey Gall had a chorus at the Jewish Y. And that chorus, he died, of course, and disbanded. So they asked me to start over again. So I had a chorus of adults singing only Jewish music at the Y.
At the Y.
That's what Passamatic was then, the executive director.
But and at Road of Sholem, you were...
Then I became the principal.
Principal
of the, school.
Of the religious school.
That's correct.
All right.
And a big school.
That was a big
school. There were 1,500 kids in the school. I had over 100 teachers in that school. Now they're down to 300 kids, I understand.
That's
terrible. Less. Well, that's what's
happening.
That's happening in most religions. Don't say that's only in Rosh Hashanah. Most religious schools, their attendance is way down. In fact, their membership is way down. And it's a very serious matter.
You must enjoy working with children.
I love kids. When they predicted when I graduated high school that I would be the first guy married in the class, and the same thing in college, I can go to a party of six-year-olds and have a ball. I love people, and most love kids. They all predicted that. It didn't work out. I'm the only bachelor left.
How did you escape?
Well,
you ran fast. You were a runner.
Thank God to people like that.
Oh, yeah, I always had my skates on.
What did you do during the war years?
I was drafted in the war. I had a warrant officer's commission, but I never went one day. The day before I was to leave, my brother was killed. My father had a heart attack when the telegram came. It was a very terrible thing. He died 3 months later. They gave me a six-month deferment if I'd go to work in the defense plant. And so they wouldn't let me quit teaching school, so I taught school till 3 o'clock, and from 4 till 12, I worked in the defense plant. Right?
Where was the defense plant?
The ornamental, well now it's the ornamental ironworks, I don't know what they call it. Where is that? Out there in Homewood Brushland. That's, you know Lou Bloom? Do you know the Bloom
family? I know.
Yeah. Well, they're all kind of Pittsburghers here. And they made gas masks, and so I worked for them.
Which war?
Second.
They made gas masks in the Second World War?
They made gas masks.
Your brother was killed then in the Second World War. Where?
In Salerno.
In Salerno. And that was the day before you were to be inducted.
That's correct.
Did you ever play in nightclubs, things like
All over the place, everywhere.
What happened during Prohibition? Was there, you were a young student, you weren't playing in clubs then?
I was a young man. I was 16.
You wouldn't have been affected by that at all.
Can I go back a little and ask you, you said you became disenchanted with the jazz community. For what reason?
Well, first of all, the kinds of people that I ran into, the kind of life it was. Let me give you an experience. What life was like on the road. Now, remember, I'm 18 years old at that point. Mm-hmm. So, it was very attractive. I got a job. Kate Kaiser opened up the Chatterbox, and he needed somebody to play.
That's the Chatterbox in the William Penn Hotel?
That's correct. Remember that?
Sure, I do.
And I played in the band. When Kate Kaiser started there. So. Now, he needed somebody to play four different instruments. Now, there are other guys who are much better than I, but I could play four instruments. I played a violin, I played a viola for him, I played a flute, a clarinet, and saxophone. And so my first, geez, I don't know whether I should put this on tape. Stop the tape and I'll tell you the story. And
okay.
Well, the life of a jazz band musician on the road is a very difficult time of a life. You play in a band, say from 9 o'clock to 12 or 1 o'clock, play a dance. And then you get into a bus, you travel all night, and the next morning you land in another city, and you grab a couple hours sleep because you got to rehearse in the afternoon, and that night you're playing a band again, and you're back in the bus. You never see anything but a dance hall and a hotel room. Mm-hmm. It sounds very dry. You travel all over, but you never see anything. You're traveling at night, you can't see out, you try to sleep on the bus, and hard to sleep. And that's why the boys start taking things. And this becomes terribly dangerous, and they're taking all kinds of stuff to sleep. That's, they start off to sleep, and then of course they get hooked, and things begin to happen. And when I saw what possibilities there were that I was probably end up the same way, I left.
And, sure doesn't any different today with
I don't know what's going on today. I mean, I've been out of this sphere for some time, so I have no idea. I left that whole thing. I just knocked that out of my mind. I haven't picked up a saxophone since. And in fact, I gave my nephew a saxophone and gave him a couple lessons on it.
Union an important factor for musicians?
Union?
Yes.
Oh, yes, you have to be. If you wanted, well, you know, you could, there were not a lot of non-union musicians, but you couldn't play in big places. You couldn't play in, it had to be union. The waiters would walk off. Everybody else would walk off. You can't have a non-union band in a big hotel in America. The other unions wouldn't stand for you. The kitchen help would walk out. Everybody would walk.
So when you left your Pittsburgh Board of Education, and then you went to Road of Shoal.
No. I did this at the same time.
Oh, these were simultaneous jobs.
Oh, yes. In fact, I had another job, too. I taught at Duquesne University at night. I'm not doing anything. I taught administration.
School administration.
Mm-hmm. And the School of Education.
And then, what was your next step?
Well, then I stayed there, and I did that for many years. And I conducted the Youth Symphony all the time. Then I left that, and I stayed with the board, and I had most of the all-city groups. I conducted the all-city orchestra and the all-city band, the best kids in the city of Pittsburgh. And I had plenty to do. I had four all-city groups. I had an elementary school orchestra. I used to go to Road of Shalom in the morning from 9 to 12. And from 1:30 till 4 o'clock, I had an all-city elementary orchestra. And on Sunday, I went to Road of Shalom in the morning. And at 1 o'clock, I had the youth symphony rehearsal until 5. So
no wonder you didn't get married.
7 days a week.
And you didn't have time to get married.
Maybe that's right. I'm too tired to get married. But that's it. No, that was it. That was very interesting. I loved every minute of it.
And then how long did you keep on all these activities?
Well, I just quit. I quit when I retired in 1976.
You were still doing all
up
of these?
No, I dropped the Youth Symphony. I had the orchestras and I taught. Until 1976, I had four jobs.
Were you, did you retire voluntarily from all
yes.
of these things?
The school system, we got a superintendent in, and he and I never had a personal argument. His philosophy and ours were two divergent philosophies, completely opposite. And I could not function. So I used to take the stuff home and eat my heart out and worry about it and realize there was nothing to do. And I had enough years in that I could get a very good pension, and I decided so. I wasn't old enough to retire, but I said, I'd take it anyhow. So I took it anyway. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't old enough for
And at the
social
same
security.
Time, you retired from the Road of Shalom also?
No, I quit Road of Shalom, about 2 years before that I quit.
But since you retired, what have you been doing?
That's a good question. Well, I went to the South and conducted an orchestra there for a I don't want to get into that too much because of other problems that are occurring right now in the city. And so, but I conducted for, I was there for 2 years. I had a symphony orchestra and designed something that I am currently involved with. That's right. And so I took this out to give you an idea of what I did there and some of the things. Yeah. And you can read this thing. And I've come up with a design. I got all excited. My heart still lay with education. I guess I'm still a teacher. And I have come up with a design, and that was what I'm currently involved in right now. I'm looking for an angel at this moment. But to teach people how to listen to good music, and I experimented with those orchestras, and I did over 150 concerts, live concerts in the schools. And I had some soft money, as we call it, some federal money. I wrote a proposal, it was granted, and we got $300,000 to play with. And I put on about 100 and some concerts with this money of how to teach it. So now my idea is to take this stuff, and one of the stories is on here of a little kid who didn't go to the concert and wrote a letter how great the concert was. And that was fantastic. How could that be? The little girl got sick. It was a period. Anyway, so she couldn't go to the concert. She was in school with me. But when she got out and she went back to class, she wrote me a letter saying, the kids were so excited. I lived through that whole concert with what they were telling me, how great it was. You've got to come back, and I promise not to be sick.
This is fairly recent now you're talking about.
Yes, 1978.
That's
wonderful. Very interesting.
Yeah, so it's only 3-4 years. Yeah. So I'm still, you see, I'm not dead yet. I'm not in the rocket.
I'd say you're far from that.
Oh, thank you. Anyway, but that's the story. So what I'm involved in, I've always been involved in, my theory has always been that the reason people don't like concerts is because they don't know anything about it. And it's very difficult to teach about music, but this is a way to do it, that I can teach anybody to appreciate a concert, the great music. Not watered down, by the way, not with any gimmickry, there's no gimmick. And we were very successful. And hopefully I can put this on, my hope is to put this on cassettes, audio-visual cassettes, and just put it in and show it in any school, if any people have it at home, or put it on cable TV, or that's what we're after right now. I'm just working on that. I don't know how far it'll go, but that's it.
How are you on the tape?
I'm almost finished. If you want to wind up here.
Too much as it is.
No, yeah, I have lots of things I want to ask.
Okay, well, let's go on until it's...
Oh, all right. I realize you're doing all these ongoing projects.
At my leisure.
At your leisure. Is there any one high point in your career or your life or anything that you were, that you look back on and say that was my moment?
Two beautiful ladies came to interview me.
Seriously, in your professional life, was there anything that gave you special satisfaction or anything that you would
I'll tell you a funny story. A teacher has very few rewards. So my life has to do with stories that happened to me that are hard to believe. I taught a kid at Peabody High School one time. And he failed in all his subjects. He was a very good musician, but he was flunking. I couldn't believe why. I went down, looked up this kid's IQ, found out that ran over, boy, he had 140 IQ, a very genius IQ. But he was flunking everything. And he hated school. I talked to him, there was no way he'd make school, but everybody came to him as a leader. I could see the kids were always asking him questions about personal things. And he was a very smart kid. Anything had to be done, I couldn't trust him to do it. But he flunked everything. He would never go to class. He was a terrible kid in school. So I used to go to the teachers to get him through, get him out of high school. He doesn't belong in school. That's not his cup of soup, the scholastic world. Then I used to get him D's, anything, to get him out. Mm-hmm. He finally graduated. He disappeared out of my life. 15 years later, I get a phone call one night. And he said, "Do you remember me? My name is Vernon Orr. I'll never forget him."
Orr. O-R-R.
Gentile. Yeah. And he said, "You remember?" I said, "How can I ever forget you?" And I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, I want to tell you what happened. Now, I know school teachers never get payoffs." He said, "But let me tell you, when I left school, I had no idea what I wanted to do." He said, "I kind of bummed around the country, and I couldn't find myself, so I joined the service. I never found life in the service. I stayed there 4 years and got out of the service. Finally, I got a job driving a truck from coast to coast." He said, "If you ever did anything like that, to keep your mind alive, you invent games. You think to keep you from falling asleep. You get involved with certain things. Only can do things mentally." So I came up with the idea of looking at the routes of the various, of the company, one of these big user transportation companies. And I memorized all the routes, and I realized that they were doing some things that were pretty bad. They were losing a lot of money. Their routes were wrong. So I went and told my supervisor, who told his boss, and they called me in. And the vice president of the big corporation called me in. And he